talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
And Chef Liz Schuster.
Chef Liz Schuster is here. Awesome. Chef is sitting in the Michelle chair. Chef Liz Schuster is a good friend of mine, and she is the head of Tenacious Eats, which does the Movies for Foodies, where we sit around and we watch a movie and we get a 5 or 6 course gourmet meal. It's a lot of fun. Welcome, Chef Liz.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate it.
So glad you're here this morning.
Yeah, I remember when you mentioned that eating during the movie. I saw a posting on Facebook by a buddy of mine a year ago. Not only was he adamant against people texting, which is wrong, and talking during the movie, he said, yes, and you should finish all your popcorn by the time the movie starts. I'm like, what? No! You should be able to nibble on something.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point of free refills?
For gosh sake.
Just eat your refill, too.
I think they're so full that they forget about the popcorn. The nibble is completely out. It's more about the nosh.
Go from
nibble to nosh.
When you go to the movies, if you don't mind me asking, what do you prefer to get at the concession stand, depending on, like a general type of multiplex theater?
Well, I am a chocoholic. So I usually gravitate to Raisinets, M&M's, or, some type of Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Okay. So rather than the popcorn.
Oh, no, that's an addition. That's just the first layer. Okay. This is complicated. Then I get popcorn with no butter because I hide green Tabasco sauce in my bag and Parmesan cheese.
Mm-hmm. Oh, seriously.
But if you always ask for no butter, then you're getting fresh popcorn. Did you know that? They have to pop it for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Little known trick.
What movie theater has the best popcorn in town?
I would say High Point, hands down.
Yeah, definitely. Hands down.
That's a great choice. Yeah. That's a great theater.
And it's the best movie theater in town, doggone it. The High Point. We're just, St. Louis is so lucky to have the High Point.
If
you think about it.
Yeah, so when you're watching a film at home on your DVD player or whatever, is there a particular snack you like to whip up for your home viewing?
It's still the popcorn. Yeah. Popcorn with Tabasco and Parmesan. It's kind of an illness. Try it. It's not really hot. It's just that nice acid. I'm a huge snacking person. Like, even when I write menus, I have to have a snack.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
watching films, I have to have a snack. Mm-hmm. Imagine trying to write a menu and watch a film at the same time.
Yeah.
I have everything laid out, like this bizarre kind of palette of munchies.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really have to have something like chocolate, something salty, I'm not a big soda drinker, but I do like my caffeine. It's got to be coffee or Red Bull.
Yeah, and you're not just a chef and a snacker and a foodie. You're a movie buff as well.
That's
kind of cool,
true.
Which is why we're here. What are some of your favorite movies of all time, Chef Liz?
You know what? It changes. Do you ever have that, Tom? Do you ever have the gym where
No.
Well, it depends.
Changed from my favorite of a certain year, but of all time, it really hasn't changed.
No, me neither. I'm kind of a list maker.
I would say my number one, and for me, the two of you are going to fall out of your chairs on this one, but number one favorite film is Annie Hall.
There you go.
Why would we fall out of our chairs? That's a great movie.
That is a great movie.
Oh, I love you. I love you both.
Fabulous movie.
Hey, have you seen the new Woody Allen movie by any chance?
No, I missed it because I was in the kitchen.
Chef Liz and I were supposed to go see Cafe Society Saturday night, and we had a date, but I was sitting there in the nice High Point Theater drinking free beer, watching the Woody Allen movie for the third time, I will say, and poor Chef Liz was stuck in a hot kitchen somewhere.
Sweating.
I hope you got to see it. It's the best. And I've seen it 3 times now, and I'd see it a 4th time. So maybe we can still go and see it again. It's only going to be the High Point the rest of this week, though. I know Friday, Florence Jenkins opens Friday.
Yeah.
But it'll stick around town. It's actually doing pretty well.
Do you usually rate your movies like top five, or how do you? I mean, because I do like top five that I would have to watch over and over again. Top five
mine in a list. I'm a listy kind of guy.
You know what I mean? There's like top five, if it's an apocalypse, what five movies am I going to save that's going to, represent?
Oh, sure, yeah.
But I love The Godfather.
There you go. And you've shown that at your Movies for Foodies before.
Yes, I did.
A lot of Italian food, I assume.
Eight courses long and no horse.
There you go. No horse meat.
Yes. So speaking of five, I don't know how often you have gotten to the movies this year so far. Is there anything that's stood out from 2016 so far for you?
You know what? I haven't really made it to films outside of children's films with my 9-year-old daughter, Josephine. But I remember I was listening to someone else on the radio talking about the film Zootopia. Mm-hmm. I know that's not, you know, we're 2015, right, release?
Oh, no, that was spring.
But there was a lot of commentary about how there was a lot of, you know, socioeconomic, demographic, racism.
Yeah. A little too much.
Yeah.
And, oh, just fine for me.
And with the Shakira soundtrack, no less. Yeah. You know, and I thought, well, this is, maybe they're overthinking this, but I'm watching this, I'm like, holy cow, this is...
It's in there.
It's blatant. And,
the expensive laughs.
Yeah, it was
Plenty of laughs.
Gorgeous
to look at. Oh, what a beautiful looking film. You know, the design of everything is just fantastic.
Well, you know, I talked to my 9-year-old about it. Like, what did you take from this film? And she repeated everything that I thought I observed. But this is the child that also watched Little Mermaid and said, you know, well, what's wrong with her, Mom? She gave up her voice for some guy she didn't know. I'm like,
Oh, yes, that's my girl. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
So what about actors and actresses? Who are some of your favorite performers in films?
Oh, man, it depends. I really love Jeremy Irons.
Oh, yeah, Jeremy
Irons. I love Gabriel Byrne. I don't know. It depends. I do love Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because
what's not to love?
William Dafoe. Yeah. I love the morally ambiguous kind of characters. You know, I like Jack Nicholson before he was Jack Nicholson.
He was kind of doing a parody of himself.
Yeah, like Five Easy Pieces. Those films I really appreciate.
The Last Detail is a great one too.
Oh yeah, and I do like old. I like Kirk Douglas. I love Paths of Glory.
Oh, I do too. Yeah. I just saw that at the
time. That's one of my favorite Kubrick films. But I hate to say this, but I love John Wayne. John Wayne.
Sure. Nothing beats a great John Wayne movie.
Well, good. I'm glad you're not picking a bunch of contemporary actors. Oh, I love Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise. But that's okay. Those guys have their strengths as well.
I'm a Shia LaBeouf fan.
There you go. All right. Well, let's...
Don't you love saying LaBeouf?
LaBeouf.
There you go. All right. Let's talk about the top 10 at the box office of the weekend. This is when Michelle McHugh usually calls in, but Michelle is tied up. We're not sure where Michelle is. I don't know if she's... Maybe she is tied up.
The seat is a little awkward. So
Do we want to do a Casey Kasem on this one?
Do this backwards. Yeah, when Michelle does it, she does it 1 through 10. I'm going to do it. Well, actually, it's number 2. I always call it the top 10. It's actually the top 12. Let's start with number 12. That's Cafe Society. I think that was number 12 last week.
It was. It's in the same position. It's interesting. Yes.
Yeah. And number 11 is Finding Dory.
The Unstoppable.
Made 2.0. Number 10 is Ice Age Collision Course, which I reviewed at WeAreMovieGeeks.com and didn't care for.
Second weekend of that, right?
How many is that now of Ice Age?
That's five, I think.
Is about 4.5 too many. That made 4.3. Ghostbusters, 4.8. I don't think that's performing as well as... Some people
You honestly think of Ghostbusters?
It was funny and nostalgic and had a lot of great moments.
Yeah,
It wasn't that funny, though.
I thought it was better than the original myself. Well,
the original
blasphemy.
Was no great shape.
What?
Really?
Yeah. Why did you think it was better than the original?
I don't know. I thought that Murray had all the jokes pretty much in the original. I think they spread them out fairly evenly in this one. And there's a lot of little new characters. Chris Hemsworth as a receptionist is so funny in it. Mm-hmm. I thought a lot of supporting players were really great. I enjoyed it. It maybe is, you know, even more than the first one, but or the original, I should say. Okay. Certainly better than Ghostbusters 2.
There you go. That's not saying much. Let's move on. Number 8 was Nerve, and that made $4.9 million, probably thanks to my positive review at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. Number 7 was Lights Out. That's a horror movie that we saw a couple weeks ago. That made $6 million.
Yeah, it's about 3 weeks old.
Number 6 was a new movie that I saw yesterday afternoon, and I'll be reviewing here in a little bit. It's called 9 Lives. That starred Kevin Spacey and Jennifer Garner. That made $6.5 million. I guess that was the poorest performing new movie this weekend. Number 5 was Star Trek Beyond, which I saw Friday morning.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
you did.
I took the girls.
Yeah, I hope they enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, we all enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed all three of these Star Trek movies about the same. I didn't think it was any better than the last one. I thought... Benedict Cumberbatch was a better villain than, who was it, Idris Elba? I think
The last one was trying so hard to be a remake of Wrath of Khan. This one got to branch on his own a little bit more.
I suppose. Number 4 was The Secret Life of Pets. That's holding super strong. It made $11.6 million. Number 3 was Bad Moms. Did you review Bad Moms, Jim?
I did. Yes, I was pretty positive on it.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Well, it's raunchy, but, you know, it's pretty fun. And, you know, particularly I've just forgotten her name, but I'll think of her in a second. Jessica Hahn, I believe, is her name. Catherine Hahn.
I'm afraid to see it. I'm afraid that all the funny quips and everything are just in the trailer.
No, there's a lot of stuff still there. That was the thing with Ghostbusters. You thought all the funny stuff's in the trailer, but it's not. Okay. And some films, they are.
There you go. Number two was Jason Bourne, which made a $22.7 million. And number one was Suicide Squad. Made $135.1 million. Michelle sent me some notes here. I got to read them. Warner Brothers' latest DC Comics release took aim at the global box office and posted the biggest August opening ever at both the international box office and in North America for a combined weekend of $267.1 million in 58 territories around the world. That sets a new high watermark for an August launch, lapping Guardians of the Galaxy's $94.3 million bow. It also ranks as a new personal best for star William Smith trumpeting I Am Legend. I would not call Suicide Squad a William Smith movie.
No. Hey, you're confusing it with the great William Smith, who was Conan's dad.
That's right.
So you don't want to confuse those. This is Big Willie here.
Falcon Eddie. But he's part of a ensemble cast.
Yeah. It's certainly, better than After Earth. But certainly I enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy a lot more than this.
We're going to review Suicide Squad here in just a minute. We got some other movies to review, though. Jim, why don't you give us a quick review of Florence Foster Jenkins?
I'm so excited. We're going to make a recording.
Bravo! It was wonderful, Bunny.
Want to try another taste?
Well, I don't see why. That seemed perfect to me.
Friday. That stars Meryl Streep.
Yeah, that is the big one opening this weekend. It is based on a true story. It's set in 1944. It is the true story of Miss Jenkins, who is a sort of a wealthy dowager living in New York City. And when you first meet her, she's putting on a big show for the Verdi Club. Basically, she's kind of posing. They have a tribute to Wagner, and they're all dressed as Brunhildes and Valkyries and everything. Mm-hmm. And she's married to Hugh Grant's character, who is St. Clair Bayfield. He's a failed Shakespearean actor, and he's sort of her manager, her husband, her protector. And he's setting up these things for her, and he's flabbergasted when they get home after the Verdi Club. Florence wants to sing again, and so they're going to set up music lessons for her, and they hire a young pianist who is played by Simon Helberg, who most folks might know from the Big Bang Theory TV sitcom as Wolowitz. And he goes in there to play for Miss Jenkins, and it turns out she is a horrible singer. She is absolutely the worst.
Her husband's wealthy.
Her husband is wealthy, but he's got a girlfriend on the side. It's sort of, they have an arrangement.
So it's kind of like the William Randolph Hearst, Marion Davies dynamic.
A little bit there. His girlfriend on the side is played by Rebecca Ferguson. We may remember her from the last Mission Impossible film. And she's over in Brooklyn. And basically he puts Florence to bed and then goes over and joins her. They have an interesting relationship because, Florence was married previously. And she gave her first husband her virginity, and he gave her syphilis.
I hate when that happens.
Oh, boy. And I know you're wondering, Tom, she did not marry Al Capone, in case that was your question. Yeah. But when Hugh Grant puts her to bed, she has to take off her wig, and it's a very startling scene, and it sort of gives the character you have a little more sympathy for Florence Jenkins. She's not a complete joke. When you first meet her, you think she's sort of in the vein of the Margaret Dumont character from the Marx Brothers films, or Simona Boniface from the many Three Stooges shorts, the haughty high society woman. Mm-hmm. But she's got a good heart. She just doesn't understand that she's not hitting those high notes as she should. Now, the accompanist Cosme, played by Helberg, he's stunned when he's playing for her, and he finally takes Hugh Grant aside and says, she can't do this. And later on, Florence decides to cut an album. And the engineers are going, "We want to do that again?" And she says, "Oh, no, it was perfect the first time."
Sounds like Ed Wood.
A little bit. that's the end one of the opera.
That was
world.
Perfect.
Yes, what are you talking about?
All right, well, what's the bottom line, Jim? Is this movie any good? Will Meryl Streep get her 98th Oscar nomination?
Well, that's a possibility, but I think the strong contender for supporting actor is Mr. Hugh Grant. This is the best I've seen him in years.
Oh, yeah?
He's terrific, and he's really conflicted. He's trying to protect her from the critics and all that, and he's actually paying people off to attend these little mini concerts, and this sort of comes to a head when Florence rents out Carnegie Hall for herself, and she's going to give a benefit concert for all the servicemen. Yeah. And he's trying to prevent Earl Wilson, who was a real columnist back in the day, from attending that concert. He does, and he spills the beans. He's the Pope in the punch bowl, I guess. He blows the lid off things, and it just devastates Florence Foster. But by that time, you're kind of rooting for her, everyone else.
So you're reviewing this for Weird Movie Geeks this week?
No, I believe Kate is.
Okay. If you were to review it, how many stars do you think you would give it?
I'd give it a solid 4, because by gosh, they recreate New York City in the 1940s, and it just looks gorgeous.
All right, so Jim recommends Florence Foster Jenkins. Moving on, let's review Suicide Squad.
This is the deal. You're going somewhere very bad.
Look at the pretty lights.
To do something that'll get you killed. You might want to work on your team motivation thing. You heard of Phil Jackson?
Yeah.
He's like the gold standard. Okay? Triangle, bitch.
Jim and I saw Suicide Squad last week one night. Michael Hafner reviewed it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, gave it 2 out of 5 stars. It made a whole boatload of money. What did it make? $135 million. And I'm sure the majority of those people went home disappointed, as did I, and did everybody I know. Just about some people seem to like it based on Facebook postings, but
the indignation at Rotten Tomatoes. Let's shut that site down. Yeah. They didn't like our movie. For gosh sakes.
Yeah.
But then again, of course, I just got my new latest check from Marvel Disney, so I have to give it a bad review because they're paying us all
off.
You know,
and I don't think the makers of Nine Lives wanted a Rotten Tomatoes shut down, and it was
like
a lot lower score than the Suicide Squad. Yeah, the Suicide Squad's a big mess. You think that the DC movie makers would have learned their lesson from Batman versus Superman, which people had a lot of problems with it being too dark and too overloaded and a lot of other things. And they did not learn their lesson at all. In fact, I think Suicide Squad is even worse than Batman versus Superman.
I will say it's slightly better. Mm-hmm. That's because I just got so irritated by Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor.
Yeah, that's true.
And
he was a
Superman.
Lousy villain.
But this one
has a lousy villain, too.
This is a villain out of a subpar Ghostbusters ripoff. I mean, she's on top of a building, and she's casting a spell, and there's a whirling whirlpool above her.
It's dark,
Ghostbusters.
And a destroyed city.
It's ridiculous.
And it's about these supervillains. And we saw a movie last month called Wiener Dog. Did you see Wiener Dog?
Wiener Dog.
Yes.
Did you?
Yes.
Fantastic, yes. Wasn't it? But there was a scene in that where Danny DeVito's interviewing one of his pretentious film students, and he's talking about a supervillain that he's invented called Sticky Fingers.
Yes.
And that's what I thought about that during this movie, because these villains are so lame. You've got Firefinger Man.
Well, he's El Diablo.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you've got, Asian sword fighting girl. How many times have we seen that character? Done much better in those Sin City movies.
Or a Kill Bill.
And then you've even got Deadshot. Is he, a hitman with really good aim?
Yeah, he's Mr. Bang Bang, pretty much. But the funniest, though, is Slipknot. He can get out of any knot.
I think you're describing it could go one of two ways. When I looked at the name of the cast of characters, when I was, looking through the breakdown of who everybody was, I was like, I'm familiar with the comics, I wanted to see how they were going to be described in the film. I still haven't seen it yet, but I'm thinking the whole time I'm listening to the two of you talk, I'm like, this could go one of two ways. This could be, like a fraternity sorority fight. You know what I mean? Like Slipknot, Firefingers, I'm like, or it could be like really bad soft porn. It's one of the two.
It's really bad something.
Well, Slipknot reminded me of Trini Lopez in Dirty Dozen because they take him out away.
We forgot about Captain Boomerang.
Oh my gosh.
This guy robs banks, but while he's robbing banks, he throws a boomerang.
But he loves pink unicorns.
Oh, that's right.
He steals in order to get more pink unicorns. That's
pretty quirky.
That's real.
But you talk about the source comic books, and yeah. I think one of the problems, there's a lot of bad decisions made by the makers of Suicide Squad. I think they may have made the movie for the fans of the comic books, and instead of people like me who are completely unfamiliar with the comic books, the only two characters I was familiar with, of course, were Joker and Harley Quinn, and they're way in the background.
Well, Harley's right up there. She's like the second to Will Smith's character, pretty
well,
much.
Well, the person with the biggest part is Viola Davis, and what was the name of her character?
Amanda Waller. She's a big player in the DC universe, this character.
She's not a particularly interesting character. She's this bureaucrat who's dressed up in a suit, and she's playing... I don't think she's played very well by Miss Davis. She's sort of stern and sort of lacks charisma. I guess she's supposed to be sort of like what Sam Jackson is in the Marvel universe.
Oh, but Sam's much more interesting.
Well, Sam has the type of charisma and persona that translates to comic book movie, and Miss Davis does not. She's a fine actress. I don't mean to pick on her. She's been nominated for Oscars, and she's proven herself excellent in other films, but she's very poorly cast, and she's given way, way, way too much screen time.
And, you know, I told you the other night that I thought Pam Grier had played that character. She did on the TV show Smallville.
Okay.
And we saw this character on screen before in that lousy Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds, where she was played by Angela Bassett.
Okay.
But her character was killed off in that one. But, of course, the Ryan Reynolds film has nothing to do with the current DC universe. But I'm sitting there, and we have a couple of cameos by some of the DC heroes. And I'm sitting there going, I want to see an Affleck solo Batman movie. It would be more interesting to me to see him fighting the Jared Leto Joker and the Margot Robbie Harley Quinn than anything that's going on.
Oh, no doubt.
Movie.
Well, they should have made the movie about the Joker and Harley Quinn. They should have had them in the foreground and all these other little goofy characters way in the background. It would have been a much, much better movie. I think it'll have made more money. This thing made a lot over the weekend, but it's going to drop like a stone next week.
You're right, Tom, though. There's a trend now. I mean, you just pointed it out that they're writing for the fans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think the fans will still come if it's a well-done film. And
true, but there's not enough fans to sustain or $300 or $400 million that this movie's going to need to make.
Oh, $800 million, have to make it to break even. But Marvel has found a way to do that because they are appealing to the fans, but they're not going to leave anybody out.
Yeah.
I think that anybody who the way the Captain America last movie made $1 billion in 2 weeks. That's not just people that are reading the comic book. That's everybody.
Well, that was a much better film too, and that had good word of mouth. But there are some positive things. I kind of like Jared Leto's Joker.
It's a different take.
It is. He's kind of creepy and kind of psychotic.
He's kind of a gangster.
Kind of scary.
Kind of a hip hop player in this.
Yeah,
you know?
There's even a really kind of brilliant little scene. I think it's sort of a fantasy scene where you see the Joker domesticated, and he's played by Jared Leto without the Joker makeup. And that scene really sticks with you. And Margot Robbie, I wasn't as impressed with. I think Harley Quinn is such a colorful character, it'd be kind of hard to screw it up. And she has this little Betty Boop voice, and what she says isn't particularly funny. Oh, that's what villains do.
She just swings a baseball bat pretty much through most of the movie.
I will say she looks great from behind with her short shorts. Excuse my chauvinism there, Liz.
But
there's a lot of that.
I mean, it's completely gratuitous.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't think it's chauvinistic at all. I mean, come on, at Comic-Con, I'd say 50% of the female population is Harley Quinn.
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
The old joke many years ago was all girls don't go to comic conventions. Oh, that's wrong now.
Yeah, full of them. It is so changed. I remember when I was younger, a long time ago, I won't say what year, but I was wearing a hand-knit Doctor Who scarf. And now characters like Harley Quinn, they're just this rampant sexuality. I mean, that's all I see on these tweens running around at these conventions.
Well, some people were complaining that some friend of mine said, well, she's not wearing the red and black outfit because that's when she was created for the Batman animated show. That's what she wore, this Harlequin outfit. But we do see that, and in one of the better sequences in it, you see her romance with the Joker, and there's a great painting by the artist Alex Ross of Harley dancing with the Joker, and he's got the white tie and tails, and they recreate that in it. And that's great. I wish the film had all been about the two of them.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's move on, though. Neither of us really liked Suicide Squad. I think we're just disappointed. I think we went in with high expectations, and the movie let us down. A movie that I think I went into with very, very low expectations with a slightly different result was Nine Lives.
You look familiar.
I'm Tom Brand. I own Firebrand.
Yes. I use newspaper in the poopy boxes, and I see your face on time is about to change everything.
Can I just pick out a cat and then I'll be on my way?
He likes you.
Yeah, keep the change.
Okay, Cass.
I'm sorry?
Let's do this.
Nine Lives stars Kevin Spacey as a warm family man. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no. What are you?
Kevin Spacey is the opposite of Mr. Warmth. Yeah. Let's just say a miscast Kevin Spacey as a family man named Tom Brand, and he's a... he's a New York real estate billionaire magnate, but he's also a risk taker. He likes to skydive into his press conferences, and he's not spending enough time with his family because he's obsessed with building the tallest skyscraper in the world. So then he asks his 10-year-old daughter what she wants for her birthday every year, and she always tells him a cat. Well, he doesn't like cats, which kind of negates the whole premise that he doesn't spend enough time with his family, because if he doesn't spend enough time with family, what does he care if he has a cat or not? But finally he breaks down and he has to get a cat. But he doesn't just go to the Humane Society or a pet store. He has to go to this mysterious back alley pet store run by Christopher Walken as a Mr. Perkins. It's kind of like Hoyt Axton in Gremlins. You know, he has to go down this alley and down the steps. And
isn't his name Felix in it? So that's kind of a nice touch.
That would have been a little too much. So he gets this cat named Mr. Fuzzlebottom or something like that.
Mr. Mittens.
Yeah.
Not Kaiser Soche.
That would have given it something. But he takes the cat, but then he goes to a meeting on the roof of his tallest building that they're building, and his evil underling sort of pushes him off the building, but somehow he manages to swing into a window or something. I don't know. And then somehow
you've forgotten
I don't know
it already.
Well, it's not that I forgot. It's just not very well explained. But somehow his mind is transferred into this cat, and he's in a coma. So he's in the hospital. So they take the cat home, and his wife and daughter are waiting for him to come out of this coma. And the cat. So you hear Kevin Spacey's voice coming through the cat. The cat's lips aren't moving or anything like that. It's really a poor idea. It's like a remake of The Shaggy Dog or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's a really lame script.
It's got five people worked on that script.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But at the same time, it's not as bad as I was expecting. It's directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, who has directed a lot of good films. He directed the Addams Family films. He directed the Men in Black films. He directed Get Shorty. He was the Coen Brothers cinematographer on some of their early stuff, like Raising Arizona. So the guy has a style, and the guy brings his A game to this lame script. I got to give him credit. It does have some of the sort of the candy-colored art direction that we associate with Sonnenfeld. It's also got the unique and creative camera angles. So it's well directed. I just wish he had tackled a better script. And also the lead casting Mr. Warmth, Kevin Spacey, was a big mistake. This is a movie that's crying out for, you know, Greg Kinnear or Ben Stiller or somebody else. But it actually has a few funny moments. There's a scene where the cat, you know, he breaks into his scotch and this cat gets drunk and the cat's stumbling around the apartment drunk. It's like the farting dogs in that Spielberg movie.
He tries to attack a shrunken Grant Williams
in
a dollhouse.
There you go. And half the time they use a real cat, and then half the time they use a CGI cat that doesn't look anything like the real cat, except it's the same color as the cat. it's an odd film. I really wasn't bored with it. It only runs about 85 minutes.
Say it's not Barry's worst film. That's still Wild Wild
West. Perhaps. But that was just overblown and overlong.
There weren't any big tarantulas or
no mechanical tarantulas in this.
Yeah. And Christopher Walken is does his usual oddball thing in this, and he's actually quite interesting in the film when he pops up. So I'd probably give it, you know, 2 out of 5 stars, which isn't any more than I would have given Suicide Squad, that's for sure. So it's not a very good movie, but it's sort of an interesting movie, this Nine Lives. I don't exactly recommend it, but it's not the worst movie in town. All right, let's move on. We got one more movie to review, and that is Anthropoid.
What is your mission?
Operation Anthropoid.
What is Anthropoid?
We are here to assassinate Reinhard Heydrich.
He's executed thousands.
Only Hitler is about him in the Nazi hierarchy.
Jim saw.
Yes.
About Nazis and assassinations. I don't know. Jim, tell us about Anthropoid.
Well, when you hear that title, you think, maybe it's some sort of horror film.
Or something Godzilla would battle. Godzilla versus Anthropoid.
Yeah, an ape-spider hybrid or something like that. But no, that was actually the code name of a special mission by the Czechoslovakian resistance in around 1938 or so, after the Nazis had taken over. There are two guys, it focuses on these two guys who parachute from England Scotland into Czechoslovakia. They are played by Cillian Murphy, who is forever the Scarecrow in the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight films, and Be Still Your Heart, Chef Liz. It's Jamie Dornan, Mr. Gray. From your favorite movie of all time,
Fifty Shades
of Grey. That's
right. I saw the trailer and I go, "Who is this guy?"
He looks familiar. I thought that during the movie. I was like, "Who is this fella?" But they parachute in and they hook up with the Resistance, which is led by Toby Jones, a terrific actor.
I saw him in the trailer.
Their mission is to assassinate the number three guy in the Nazi Party, the Germans. The number three German, you know, under Hitler and Himmler, and then there's this guy who is, General Reinhard Heydrich, known as the Butcher of Prague, and they're going to assassinate him, but there's no exit strategy there. You know, once they do it, they aren't going to be able to get out. So their only exit strategy is a cyanide tablet.
Kind of like
the
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, more or
they
less.
They should have called this one the Suicide Squad.
Yeah. They'll be more apropos since people are going to be put off by this title. But it's all set in the late 30s. Of course, the guys are just there for a few days to get this going, but they have a romance and they're introduced to Charlotte Le Bon, who I think we last saw in The Walk. That was the Twin Towers film. Yeah, the French actress. And an actress who's actually Czechoslovakian, Anna Jizerova. And it's kind of sweet. And the Jamie Dornan character, though, is kind of prone to panic attacks. So it's kind of odd. And Cillian Murphy, besides chain-smoking, is just really obstinate. And, you know, he's not going to take any guff from anyone. And you're left with, after the film is over, it's like, what was the point of this assassination? Was it to rile up Germany? Because that's what happened. You know, they wiped out whole towns after this thing happened.
So is it exciting?
The actual assassination. The mission itself, the execution or the mis-execution of it, is kind of exciting. It looks great. The period clothes and the sets are great, but it's tough to get behind these guys because they're just such screw-ups, you know, and that they kind of, you know, succeed in spite of themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of depressing because everything is doomed and you get to see the Nazis being evil, you know, which we know from other films and from our history lessons.
Yeah.
So
they never make movies about nice Nazis. You ever notice that?
There's not going to be a Hogan's Heroes movie soon, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Okay, I'm going to be reviewing it. I'm maybe going to give it 3 stars at the most.
3 stars? Oh, okay, yeah. Well, it sounds like Jim's a little disappointed in Anthropoid, but I think it looks really good, so I'm going to go see it, and I'll give you my opinion next week. But Jim's going to give it 3 out of 5 stars. Looking for his review at WeirdMovieGeeks.com this Thursday night. Okay, we're done reviewing movies. Let's talk about some local stuff. This Saturday morning at the High Point, they do the Classic Film Festival.
Yeah.
They're showing You Can't Take It With You, a Frank Capra film from 1938, which won the Oscar for Best Picture. I don't think it's as well known as some other Capra films. It's Wonderful Life or Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But those didn't win Best Picture, where You Can't Take It With You. It's a movie I've never seen. I've got a 400-foot Super 8 version.
I was on stage in that play in high school. I was Mr. Kalinkoff, the ballet instructor.
Oh, yeah?
Wow.
I can see you as a ballet instructor.
Oh, well.
A natural role for Jim Batts. Jim Stewart, Gene author Lionel Barrymore. I don't know. Have you seen the movie?
Ann Miller?
Yeah,
Ann Miller?
I have.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, she lied about her age to get in that film.
Oh, yeah.
I believe she's about 16 or 17 when she made that. So.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Saturday morning at the High Point, Classic Film. And then usually Harry Hamm shows up from Camo X to interview it. But sometimes he doesn't show up, and then I get to introduce it. So I'm always prepared. And then Friday night and Saturday night at midnight at the Tivoli is Enter the Dragon.
This is Enter the Dragon, the first martial arts film produced by a major Hollywood studio. John Saxon is Roper. He was in it for the money. U.S. karate champion Jim Kelly as Williams. He was there because he had no choice. Black Belt Hall of Fame, undisputed martial arts champion, and international film star Bruce Lee.
We haven't shown at the Tivoli Midnight in about 20 years. It's sort of Bruce Lee's showcase film.
It's kind of the Gone of the Wind of kung fu films,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. It's pretty great. I've got the original one sheet signed by John Saxon and Jim Kelly, who are his two co-stars in the film. Bruce Lee died about 2 weeks before this film was released.
Didn't John just turn 81 last week?
He's up there. He seemed pretty old when I met him about 5 or 6 years ago. And what else is going on this weekend? Another midnight show is Dr. Butcher, M.D.
For medical deviant.
We must have a psychopathic deviant in the hospital.
Maybe we should report it to the police.
No, that's out of the question. Police investigation would give us a bad name.
Medical deviant, that's an Italian gut muncher from 1980. That is showing it. The moolah is part of the late night grindhouse that they do the once a month. I've seen a Dr. Butcher MD. It's very gory. There's a lot of intestine eating and throat slashing. There's a death by outdoor motor. I think this would make a great movie for foodies.
I was about to say that.
It's perfect.
Yeah. I'm going to steal that, though, gut muncher.
Gut muncher.
You'll have to keep buckets there next to the tables.
Yeah.
We've shown, I think, some pretty
violent stuff.
Yeah, violent stuff,
yeah,
right?
Sounds of the Lambs.
Yeah. But our food wasn't gross.
No.
Cereal Mom, it was kind of pushing it with, but gut muncher. I love that.
All right. So that's Friday and Saturday night over at the Moolah at Midnight. David Huddleston died. He worked with Mel Brooks. He was in
the Coen brothers.
That's right. I think he was in his 80s. And Jim, you worked with him?
I worked on a low budget film about 20 years ago called Cultivating Charlie. I don't think it ever got a release. It was kind of a modern updating of Candide. And he played the family matriarch in that. Yeah. And I saw him there, and he was quite a character. There was one of the days I was there, there was an early shoot and everyone had to leave from the hotel at like 6 or 7 in the morning. He went up to the director and says, "I got laryngitis. I got..." He said, "I'm just kidding." They want to rattle his cage in the morning. But whenever I think of him, I think of him in Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles. As one of the Johnsons.
Yeah.
One of the many Johnsons.
Yeah, and you see him in dozens and dozens and dozens of movies. He's a very recognizable face, if not a recognizable name. So RIP to Mr. David Huddleston. We have Chef Liz here. Awesome. And Chef Liz, you host this event, Tenacious Eats Movies for Foodies, where you show a movie, like I say. But you haven't done it in about 3 months or so, because you usually take the summer off because you've got other things on your plate. But we start up again this Saturday, right? What are we showing this Saturday?
I'm really excited to kick off the season with Julie and Julia.
Julie and Julia, yes. Yeah. Julia Child.
Oh, that seems custom made for your Tenacious Eats thing.
You a big fan of Julia Child?
Well, your foodies.
I'm a huge fan of Julia Child. The Julie character, not at all.
Yeah, the Amy Adams character,
yeah. It's a schizophrenic movie, that's for sure.
For me, we were talking about why did they feel the need to tell the story with that dual narrative, because I would love to see a non-singing Meryl Streep play Julia Child all the way through. I want to see about... she was, they were both employees of our government, CIA, really kind of operatives, and they're, jet setting all over Europe. I've read all of Julia Child's books about her time in France and her letters, and what a complex, amazing chef. I love that, but I hate the Julie chick.
Why don't we just digitize it and then just cut out the Amy Adam stuff? And we would have a nice hour-long movie and serve four courses instead of six.
Well, Julia Child's birthday is this month.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so this is in honor of, it would have been, I believe, her 104th birthday.
You could replace the Amy Adams stuff with Dan Aykroyd on Saturday Night Live doing Julia Child.
That's my least favorite scene in the movies, where Amy Adams, who plays her husband?
Chris Messina.
They're like laying on the couch watching Saturday Night Live, and they have Dan Aykroyd doing Julie Childs, and they're laughing the most phony laugh.
Though? I think that's, to me, that's a perfect synopsis of who this person is in real life.
Yeah.
Because Julia Child was, she worked, it's not like now where you type up something and zip it's out there. Julia Child had to write this in triplicate form, and send these recipes to other people to test them. They were juried. She worked so hard on this for years, and then along comes, I can't even say it, Julie, comes along and just goes, "I'm going to cook my way through the mastering the art of French cooking. Well, look at me,
I'm going to blog."
Yeah,
Julia Child didn't blog.
No, and Julia Child did not like her.
Oh, is that right?
For doing this, yeah. So, I'm glad that the film was honest about that. But originally, this isn't the first time we've shown the film.
Yeah.
We've shown this a few times before, and originally I said to my staff, I said, "I'm going to fast forward through the Julie parts." They're like, "Don't do that, Chef. People can empathize with her." And I'm like, "I can't stand her." Yeah. So we're bringing in a puppet to act as Julia Child.
The, what's that name of that puppet company, local guys?
Bob Kramer's Marionettes. Yeah, yes.
They came to one of your other shows.
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Yeah. That was an appropriate one.
So who better to play Julia Child? We used to have a chef buddy of ours who's also deceased, Chef Justin Yerington. He was the best Julia Child ever, like really bad drag, 6'4", but great Julia voice. I mean, Julia was a really tall lady.
She had a foul mouth too, didn't she?
Oh, yes, she did. She was a chef.
Can you imagine a female chef with a foul mouth? Crazy, man.
Yeah, I remember when Julia was on with Letterman on his old NBC show, cooking with him, and they were just head-to-head. And for one of Letterman's anniversary shows, he said, here's what happened when we went to commercial. And he was over and said, hey, do you care to dance? And then they had a shot of some guy in drag towering over Dave and the two of them dancing.
I'm not going to fast forward through the Julie segments, but I am going to have some fun with a puppet will be representing Julia Child and saying the things that I would like to say to the Julie character.
So this is the second time you've done Julie and Julia for Movies for Foodies?
Third time.
Is the menu the same every time? Or
venue's been different. First time was at Myers Grove.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the first two times were at Myers Grove.
Actually, I didn't say venue. I said menu.
Oh, menu. Yeah. No, I've tweaked it. I've changed it every time a little bit, but all of the recipes are Julia Child's.
Mm-hmm.
Why mess with what I really feel is perfection? Mm-hmm. She works so hard on them, so how can I...
Sure.
You know, I'm breathing new life in it. No, you don't need to breathe new life in it. You know, why remake something like, an original film that was done so well the first time? Do we really need a remake? I think a lot of people like to relive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to recreate kind of a Julia Child experience through the menu. There's only one menu item that's actually a Escoffier. And that's, I think I could say this, stuff the hen till she still can't, just can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a stuffed chicken breast. So, I just don't want to mess with it so much. You know what I mean? As far as the food menus and recipes are narrative. Mm-hmm. It's story, and I get a little aggravated with chefs nowadays who are, I'm going to reimagine this. Why?
Mm-hmm.
We like peanut butter and jelly. Why does it have to be reimagined?
Now, how'd you come up with this concept of showing a movie and serving a gourmet meal around the film? And how long have you been doing this?
Well, I actually went to film school in Chicago, Columbia.
Me too.
Hi, Columbia. You too? Yay.
Yes, yes.
That's why we like each other. Oh. Yay, high five.
Yes.
But I've always worked in kitchens, and to me, they go together. I think you'll find a lot of chefs are huge, either film or music buffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's an art form that I've always loved, appreciated. I've worked on a multitude of student films, but I was working at the Scottish Arms, and I made my sous chef watch Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never seen the film before, and I was just shocked by that. I said, okay, you're not even going to make it through the credits before you're hungry. And he laughed. And really, we had to pause it. He's like, I'm starving. We got to go get Chinese. So we got Chinese, and we're eating it, but it didn't really satiate the hunger we had because we wanted to eat what we saw in the film.
And it's Chinese.
Yeah. But it's been 4 years now we've been doing this. So we're getting bigger and bigger every show. But, mm-hmm. Really, this is the first time in a long time, don't you think, Tom, that we're actually showing a food film?
I think your first several films, for the first year or two that you did it, you chose movies about food. The first one I attended was Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. that was a venue that we never returned to.
Yeah, is there a particular food-based film or food-centered film that you really, really, really liked?
There's a few, and they're kind of obscure. I really love Tom Popo,
mm-hmm.
the very awkward egg scene. I would love to make somebody reenact that. That would be hilarious. But YouTube it if you haven't seen the film, Tom Popo. It's kind of a spaghetti western meets ramen noodle film.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really love Mostly Martha because I feel like that is the closest thing I've seen.
What about the American remake?
Oh, with Catherine Zeta-Jones, yeah. I believe, right?
I think Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah.
Well, you know, talk about getting hungry watching a film. I think the last time that really happened was when I saw The Big Night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Big Night. Yeah. I love Big Night.
We've done The Big Night before, right?
Yeah, we've done it three times.
You made the timpani?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Is it in the big, like, huge saucer type of thing?
Yeah.
It's a big drum.
Like a timpano, a timpani drum. It's timpano, and it's actually so many hours of labor and love. But it's if you could imagine like a huge dome shaped lasagna of sorts, a lot less sauce, you know. But
when I saw that in the theater, you could hear people going, "What is that?
What is that?" You know, Big Night, Dinner Rush, Rush.
Yeah, Danny Aiello, that's a great one.
The first film that we did as Tenacious Eats was a film called Short Order. Have you seen Short Order?
No, it doesn't strike a bell.
Yeah. You need to see that one. It's fantastic. It's a disenchanted chef who gets tired of the fine dining world and decides she's going to be a Short Order cook. But what's so interesting is this myriad of other culinary characters she's surrounded by, and these little almost like Shakespearean asides to the camera that these chefs and restaurateurs are giving. And some of them I can't even explain because it's rated R kind of Shakespearean asides, but there's a Redgrave cameo in it even. Mm-hmm. And one of her best friends is this crazy Russian chef who believes that the best thing that a chef can do is add him or herself to the food chain. That's the biggest contribution a chef could ever make. So I don't want to give too much away, but Short Order is one of my favorites.
Well, at the opposite end, there was a Food Center film a year or so ago that aggravated me, and I went for the same. Is there's some feature films that just get you so aggravated because they miss the mark? I you know what movie I'm thinking of is Burnt. Did you see that? I guess it is dreadful. Yeah.
There were some accuracies, like the female sous chef, and she's trying to be a single mom and take her kid to school and the long hours and the kid having to be in the kitchen. That is very realistic. Mm. That part I appreciated. And she goes home and her kitchen is just cluttered with so much pots and pans. That's really what a true culinarian's kitchen looks like. It's not this beautiful, IKEA kitchen with, crap put in special places. But, all he did was scream at his staff and throw food at a wall. I just thought this is you could tell who the specialists were, the chefs that were helping. It was like Gordon Ramsay and that myriad of angry, egotistical lunatics, egomaniacs. Chefs do yell once in a while, but usually it's out of a sense of urgency. But,
A better film that came out soon before that was Chef with John Favreau.
Well, I thought when we saw that you had some problems with it.
There are problems,
better than Burnt, I think.
Well, everything's wrapped up in this beautiful little ribbon at the end with getting back together with his ex-wife. I mean, it's a hard world we live in. A lot of chefs are divorced, multi marriages, and because our craft demands so much time from us. So, that part I found very unrealistic. I do appreciate the fact that he actually learned how to use a knife. I really appreciated that.
And, so you had no problem with the cooking stuff. It's just the plot stuff.
You started doing movies for foodies at Myers Grove, which is over there in the Grove, and we would have 50, 60 people packed into this room that probably comfortably sat about 20. And people are just all on top of each other. But I think that sort of added to the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jeremy Whaley was the host for a while when it was over there. He was a little more flamboyant. I'm sort of the MC. I've been the MC for, about the past year and a half. I'm a little less flamboyant than old Jeremy. A little more laid back. I try to keep things moving.
And you don't make people do stupid human tricks. We've just changed and evolved so much. I used to be able to be really silly. We had smaller audiences. I could act out some of the scenes. And we did a 1950s comedy short night and showed my favorite Looney Tunes, What's Opera Doc. Wagner and Bugs Bunny. I mean, come on, But, I wore the helmet with the horns and
that's one of the great things about your show is all the little details. One of my very very favorite moments at Movies for Foodies event was when you showed The Jerk, and there's that great scene where Steve Martin takes Bernadette Peters out to dinner, and they order the and the waiter talks him into ordering escargot, and he stands up and goes, "Waiter, there are snails on my plate." Now, I want you to take these away from here and bring back those toasted cheese appetizers you talked me out of. Well, there was somebody in the audience that couldn't eat seafood.
A whole table.
Yeah. So you had one of your chefs whip out this grill and set it up next to their table and make these toasted cheese appetizers. Like right in front. Everybody else was enjoying their seafood. And this one table had this guy up, your chef up there making a toasted cheese for him. That was priceless.
And we were really making fun of them, you know, like, oh, you don't want escargot, you know, and they wanted the grilled cheese, and it was like Wonder Bread and the worst, you know, it was like American Craft slices.
Velveeta.
Yeah, and hi, Kathleen. She knows what I'm talking about. She's one of our regulars from way back, and Kathleen was like, "That was the best grilled cheese ever." No. But I'm like, you know, it was made by a chef, so, you know, there's a lot of love in it. Oh, yeah. So, but yeah, now that we've gotten really big, we've had to bring in more ensemble, you know, to be able to be obnoxious and have the fun. But I what was it? Eat, Pray, Love. I sat on stage and poured pasta all over myself. I'm not above being a complete lunatic and making fun of myself. Yeah.
Well, you've had to expand, though. I mean, you outgrew Myers Grove. We were at the Ozark Theater, which was the old Webster Grove Cinema when I was a kid, and that was a huge venue. We did Elf and
Love Actually
there with huge crowds, over 100 people, I think, we were at those.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've tried to – we were at Food Outreach, and we just outgrew that. We couldn't – it was like Myers Grove again. People were almost sitting on top of each other. Mm-hmm. Now we're at 5700 Leona. It's called the St. Louis Banquet Center, but it's also organized by the Marine Corps League. And I believe they're non for profit and all their funds.
It's the perfect size venue.
Yeah, yeah. And we could fit a lot more people now, so we're really excited about that. So, you know.
Oh, you were talking about films earlier. I just recalled Tortilla Soup. That was actually a remake of, Does It Pray Love?
Eat, Drink, Man Woman.
Eat, Drink, Man Woman.
No, what is it? Sorry, Eat, Drink, Man Woman.
Okay, yeah.
I'm getting confused. I'm meshing them together. Yeah, it was just they just replaced, like, you know.
With
it was
Latina stuff.
Yeah, it was Latina, arguing family, and blah, blah, blah. It was a little bit more dramatic.
Yeah. Remember Billy Crystal's joke at the Oscars about Eat, Drink, Man, Woman? Eat, Drink, Man, Woman is nominated for Best Foreign Film, which coincidentally is how Arnold Schwarzenegger asked Maria Shriver out on their first date. next month or coming up, let's talk about some of the shows you got coming up. Ferris Bueller, when's Ferris Bueller?
Ferris Bueller is September 10th. Okay. We're really excited about
that. That's a Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, we have dancers from Stages St. Louis are going to come and do some twist and shout.
Yeah.
And
while the movie's playing?
I think so, and I think we're going to maybe continue another round of that after everybody's done so everybody can get up and dance and really have fun outside the film. And then we have a marching band that's going to be making an appearance.
Really?
Yeah. And it's always crazy. You never know. Yeah. We've had confetti cannons and craziness.
It is crazy.
Gosh, we've had jugglers. I don't even know where to start.
You've had dancers before.
It's going to be crazy. And then we have, coming up October 29th, we have Hocus Pocus.
I've never seen that. With Sarah Jessica Parker.
It's really kind of dark.
It has kind of a cult following. I know people talk about that film a lot, but I just have never seen it.
And, if any of your listeners, I will give you discount codes for those films. Ferris Bueller is Abe Froman. To get $15 off each ticket. The Sausage King. I will be making my own sausage. But then for Hocus Pocus, it is Amok. The Sarah Jessica Parker line. Amok, amok, amok.
Is it duck amok?
No. And then we have the Witches of Kimswick. We have a group that are going to be coming out. We have a fortune teller. We have a tarot reader. And clairvoyance, so it's going to be kind of kooky and bizarre. And
it'll be a great Halloween event.
Yeah, I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday.
You wanted to do Star Wars, and you would plan on doing Star Wars, but then it fell back in a moratorium or something? Because I think because of that goofy Star Wars movie that's coming out at Christmas after all.
Oh, the Rogue One?
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened, too, is Fox Criterion, I have a really great relationship with them. They're pretty awesome. They sent us all these marketing materials, like, you know, pay for the 9 films now. You get a discount if you license, you know, more than, I think it was three mm-hmm. or more. So we got the you know, first film scheduled for November. And then Fox Criterion, after we even started selling tickets, said, oh, yeah. We're really sorry, Chef, but there's been some kind of disagreement with George Lucas, and we can't sell the licensing.
That's okay. There's plenty of other good movies you can show. And you are. And your show is this Saturday, and there are still tickets available for...
There are a few. There are a few. And this one, when I say a few, I think there's literally like a dozen tickets left. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll have you on again sometime. But we're going to have to wrap this up. Next week, we'll be back, and we will review Sausage Party, and we will review Pete's Dragon, and probably a couple of other things.
Yeah, more than likely.
But we got to wrap it up for now. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Chef Liz.
And be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, howdy, Steve. Hello, Don. Hey.
Black leather,
rock, rock, rock.
Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.